This food blog radio show is brought to you in part by the Cooking Everything Outdoors show, available on iTunes and YouTube. 1, 2, 3. Hi, everyone. This is Gary House with Food Blog Radio, and I have the honor to be interviewing Monty Matthews of chewingthefat.us.com and of Monty's Ham. And Monty, welcome to Food Blog Radio. Can you hear me, Monty?
Well, it's great to see you, Gary, and it's great to be here.
Excellent.
I certainly can.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me?
You're coming through loud and clear. Thank you, sir.
Good.
Now, Monty, you have not only a food blog that you're very prolific on, you also have a ham business that
I do. I have a specialty food company.
I'm sorry?
I own a specialty foods company.
Yes.
And we make Monty's Ham.
Okay. Which looks absolutely incredible. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about you and your background and really tell us a little something that we might not find out about on your blog.
Okay. Well, I have a background in advertising. I was in advertising for a number of years. I ended as a creative director in an ad agency. And when I left there, I decided to really put some of my food experience onto the page. I had worked for a lot of food advertisers, Sara Lee, Hillshire Farms, Jimmy Dean. I had also been instrumental in getting Paul Newman of Newman's Own to go into advertising. He was not a big fan of advertising. He much preferred public relations, and he told a very good story. But we got him into magazines with a campaign that was as quirky as his food line, and it was a huge success. We managed to take his charitable donations from $75 million to $275 while I was on his business. So I was very, very proud of that.
Wow.
And quite honestly, that was the genesis for Monty's Ham, in which we give a percentage of our profits to food charities. It all came from my work with Paul Newman.
Well, that's fantastic. And great products Mr. Newman has.
Mr. Newman did a phenomenal line, and I think some of the new ones that are coming that he's coming out with, I'm afraid he's not coming out with them, but that his company is, stayed very true to his belief in all natural foods and in minimal processed foods, which I think is terribly important.
Oh, yeah, I agree. That's outstanding that they're doing that.
Now, yeah.
Monty, how did you decide to produce a food blog? Was the food blog first or the business first?
Well, actually, they all sort of came together at one time. I have been writing about food for a number of years. I have several articles in Savour magazine. I have been in the Essential New York Times cookbook. So always in the back, in my background, there was another career going on, which was involved with food. So it was a very logical thing to me when I got to the point where I was leaving the ad business to look around and think about writing about food. And my initial thought was to put together a blog, which was completely, I had no clue about blogs when I started, none whatsoever. But I felt it was a great way to get my writing out there and to attract interest in my food writing. And I'm very pleased to say that I now have an agent and we're working on a book. So it's it certainly has paid off.
Outstanding. Congratulations on the book there. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Well, your blog is very popular.
Yes, it is. We're very excited. We get about 1,000 hits a day, and we've had over 4,000 page views in the 3 years that we've been up. And so a very solid subscriber list, and I'm delighted with the progress that we're making.
Yeah, that's incredible. The 1,000 readers a day, I can tell you there's a lot of food bloggers out there that are envying you right now.
Well, you know, the whole thing is my advice to anybody who's doing this is that content is king. And I think you really, once you have content, we have over 370 posts, and you then therefore find yourself in search engine heaven because you're mentioned so many times when somebody just pulls up a subject. And some of them are quite surprising to me. Some of the strength of some of them is really remarkable. I did a post for using James Beard's recipe for roast beef hash. And that recipe to this day gets 65, 70 hits a week. That is nothing. Right after Christmas, of course, when people had a lot of prime rib left over, there was a big call for that recipe. Mm. But it does astonish me. And there are some chefs whose work is so interesting to people that they will get a very high readership if you review their work or cook one of their recipes or adapt one of their recipes. I find there's a lot of interest. Thomas Keller is one who has a tremendous following. People see his name and they want to know all about him. And Ina Garten, of course, who is one of my neighbors in the Hamptons, where we live part of the year in the Hamptons and part of the year in New York City. She is tremendously popular. Hmm. So there are ways of gaining an audience, I think, by understanding what your content is and what's appealing to people and what they're reading and what they don't read, quite honestly.
Now, on your recipes, do you have a ratio of original recipes to cultivated recipes from other authors?
Oh, well, I do my original recipes, absolutely. I do put them up, but I would have to say that the whole purpose of my blog was, if I can cook it, you can cook it. And so I have used a lot of people's work. I have no qualms about it. I adapt. I have a pet peeve, which is when you go to, say, Epicurious and you read readers' comments or reviews where people have taken a recipe and completely altered it. I mean, the point, you know, the recipe was for pig's feet, and they have used chicken breast. And I find it incredible. I suppose that people can think that this is a very, you know, that this is fine, all very well, but they're not reviewing the recipe that they were given. So I try to stick fairly close to recipes that I think are really worthwhile. And then my own, certainly for my own recipes, I've done a lot of work with things that I've gone out to a restaurant and eaten and brought home the idea and worked around it. I do that quite frequently. But overwhelmingly, I use current and past recipes that appeal to me because of the protein that's being used or the method that's being used or the flavors that are being created. So I have no qualms about that. I think it's interesting for home chefs to see how you can take a relatively complicated recipe and turn it into something that is really your own.
Monty, do you have any culinary training background?
I have absolutely no, I never had any culinary training. The only reason actually that I think it's kind of funny, the reason I started to cook was because when I was getting a divorce many years ago, my mother said, "Oh, you'll never eat again." And I thought, another strange comment.
It's a challenging comment.
Yes, it was throw down the gauntlet. So I just, I started cooking then. I found that I had a great passion for it, loved it, and been doing so ever since.
How often do you put up a blog post, Monty?
I'm trying to sort of spread my wings a little bit. I just did a post today on a Cuban sandwich, which is actually from a food cart right at the corner of my street in New York. But I found it particularly delicious, and I put that up today. Also, when we travel, we tend to do a lot of posting about the place we're going to, where we've been, where we ate, what we ate. So I find that great. Source of great pleasure to me because I do love to travel and did travel for business for years and years and years. So it's great to still be able to do that and bring people to the places that you've been to.
Now, Monty, I would assume you take all your own photos.
Yes, I do. I have a tiny little camera that's actually not in great shape. It's got a Sony digital camera with a Carl Weiss lens. And I think it takes pretty good pictures. I'm a graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design, and my minor was in photography. So I have had some experience shooting pictures, although these are really not the quality of pictures that, they're not professional quality pictures. They're very much snapshots of my food and my life.
That's okay. I think there's probably too much emphasis on perfect food photography these days to where we're losing what the food blog is really about.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, I love beautiful pictures. And, you know, when I was in advertising, of course, we used to talk about lick the page photography, where you really got people's appetite. I mean, you do eat first with your eyes. And by the way, that is a limitation that I find with blogging. There are dishes that simply will not look well on your blog. I mean, they just won't. I did an absolutely delicious lamb dish the other day with peas. It was an Indian dish, and my partner took one look at it and said, "Well, if you eat with your eyes, nobody's going to eat this." So it actually didn't make the blog. It was quite delicious. It was kind of nursery food, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Nursery children's food reminded me of when I was growing up, the kind of food that we had in our nursery. So, but it was really not photographable, did not make a pretty picture. Whereas some things, you know, I must confess, there are some things that I will cook because I know the color is going to be great. The Italian wedding soup that I just featured last week, that's a very beautiful bowl of soup. And it's in... Again, if you eat with your eyes, you really want to eat this particular dish.
Yes, it's very appetizing.
Yeah, really, very, very. And by the way, that's a very wonderful recipe. Very, very simple and wonderful cold weather food. And I know a lot of parts of the country are suffering with the cold weather. And staying indoors with a bowl of soup is a nice thing to do.
Wonderful. Monty, how old is your food blog?
I started in 2009, okay. In the fall of 2009, so we're going to be four this I think actually the first posting was October 30th, 2009,
oh, nice.
And so this fall will be our fourth anniversary, and so I cut back. I do 2 days a week, and I have a schedule, and I have some adorable fans, a woman particularly who checks every 5 minutes on Monday and Thursday, make sure that she's not missing the post. But I do Monday and I do Thursday. And I chose those days because Monday I generally feature something that's a weeknight dinner that you can put together fairly quickly, fairly easily, and will vary what you're eating, what you normally serve your family. And they're generally 30 minutes. They're clearly made for a hurried cook. And then on the weekend, the Thursday prior to the weekend, I will do something that's a little more elaborate, something that might require a little more time in the kitchen. Baking, we very often do baking closer to the weekends because of jobs, et cetera, people don't tend to bake in the middle of the week. So this is the pattern that I've established. And then I'll throw in a bonus post. Today I did a bonus post, as I said, on the Cuban sandwich that's sold outside my house. I do that. Sometimes I do that just to liven things up, really. Mm-hmm. Well, also, another time when I will break my own rules is that I will lead up to Christmas, lead up to Thanksgiving with a week daily recipes that are all leading up to the big day, so that you have the cranberry sauce one day and things that can be made ahead to make your Thanksgiving easier. So I do that for Thanksgiving, I do it for Christmas, I do it for Easter.
And you must focus on your product line also.
Well, my product line, the banner across the top of the page leads directly to our ham business is completely internet-based. I started it on the internet. The most amazing thing I'd have to say is that I probably could not have started this business were it not for the internet. So I made the blog a partner with the ham business. The ham business is a very it's a wonderful business for me. I was very interested in sustainable agriculture, and I was very concerned about upstate New York. Upstate New York, for all the riches and wealth of the city, once you get outside a 100-mile radius, there's extraordinary loss of employment. There were huge problems with dairy farms once the milk price supports went away. So I was really keen on seeing if I couldn't do a business that would help family farms. And that's what our whole premise is. We help family farms by what this is an outgrowth of a project that Hillary Clinton, when she was our senator, set up, a farm-to-table movement called the Pride of New York. And what they were trying to do was to convert dairy farms over to hog production, so that the pig is the most domesticated and widespread animal in the world. I don't know if you're aware of that. There are billion pigs in China alone. Now, I had developed a ham recipe years ago and a glaze that went with it. And that ham was my entree to Saveur magazine. I wrote an article about it. And then I became famous for that recipe. It was picked up all over the place for Monty's ham. And so when I was looking to get into the food business, ham was a very logical thing. And what I discovered was my premise had been, when you have a lot of people over, buy a cheap ham and glaze the hell out of it. Well, it turned out, of course, the cheap ham was, nothing could be worse for the environment than cheap ham. Factory farm hams, in my opinion, ought to be banned. It's an atrocious way of raising animals. It was done in a lot of tobacco states to get them away from tobacco. And unfortunately, it's something I really, people should be aware of. My hams are completely pastured. They're never penned. They live on a grass diet. They are beautifully taken care of. There are no antibiotics used at all in our production. And we end up with a ham that is absolutely superior. It does not look like ordinary ham because our smoking process, we have used pure hickory smoke. And I found a family who have been curing hams this way for 50 years. They don't use nitrates and they don't use nitrites. So the ham is completely free of salts. And both of those are salts. So when you salt the ham, that's what gives the ham its pink color. My ham looks much more like smoked pork or a fresh ham. It tastes absolutely wonderful because it has that wonderful smoky ham flavor, but it does not have nitrates or nitrites. It's infinitely better for you, and an awful lot of people are waking up to the fact that that the way hams are loaded with water, processed with tons of water, shot full of nitrates and nitrites, is not the best way to eat ham. And I have a very loyal customer base, and we've been extremely well accepted. We were in Williams-Sonoma catalog at Christmas. We sold hundreds of hams through Sonoma. We sell through Gilt.com, which is another. That's actually Ruth Reichels is the food editor for Gilt.com. They carry our hams year-round, and we sell them every week. And, of course, we're gearing up right now for Easter, which is always a big ham season. So, but if you're at all interested in Monty's ham, you better get it quick, because I'm astonished by how fast they're moving, even though we're a month away from Easter, which is March 31st this year. Anyway, when you go to that site, I've done 18 videos. I have 18 videos that will show you recipes, ways to use our hams, ways to use leftover ham, dishes that you probably haven't thought of. Because a ham, a good big ham is a commitment, because they really do have a lot of flavor and a lot of meat on them. And a lot of people find that they have ham left over. And I've shown some wonderful ways, ham and linguine and all manner of dishes, wonderful breakfast casseroles, all kinds of things you can do with ham. And I did a series of recipes through eHow. And these recipes, you can actually follow me as I take you through each of these recipes.
And these are video recipes?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're follow along, and they're also very cleverly, I think, they also come, the video is there, but they also have a transcript. So you can have the transcript right along with it. So you could print that out and you would have the directions. Mm-hmm. We also, my glaze, which is a wonderful mix of real Dijon mustard, Seville orange marmalade, and organic brown sugar. That glaze, I'm very proud of. You can use that on ribs. You can use it on carrots. You can use it on, you can glaze chicken. You can glaze salmon. Anything that you want to, you could use this as a glaze. And I have customers who buy it by the case just for that reason. They don't just use it on ham. It's also a wonderful sandwich spread. So all in all, my cheese ham glaze is a winner. And we're very proud of it.
Now, Monty, you mentioned the size of the hams. I mean, what are we looking at as an average size for a ham from you?
Two sizes. And the smaller size is 6 to 8 pounds, and that's a boneless ham. Now, that ham is all ham, and that feeds about 10 to 12 people. But we also, our really pièce de resistance is a 16-pound bone-in ham with a beautiful cap of fat on it. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous ham. The ham that you're seeing in that picture on the front page, that is, of course, the large bone-in Monty's ham. And I highly recommend it because the soup bone alone from that ham is worth its weight in gold because it makes such incredible soup. Our ham is not inexpensive, but it is not inexpensive to raise. My wholesale on this ham would astonish most people. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't have any qualms about spending it on prosciutto or Spanish ham, but this ham, believe me, I think it's kind of interesting because I will not mention the brand, but I was in my supermarket the other day where the deli ham was on sale for $7.99 a pound, and that's regular deli ham, and branded, but regular deli ham. And my ham runs about $11 or $12 a pound. And you cannot buy it except in those two configurations. So that it is not an inexpensive product, but it is worth every penny. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure it is. With a loyal following, that speaks for itself. Fantastic. Monty, with Easter coming up, can you give us some ham cooking tips?
The most important thing to me is to cook a ham low and slow. Don't try to rush it. Here's the thing that some people are confused by. Ham is pre-cooked, but it is only pre-cooked to 125 degrees. The temperature of the ham must be raised to 148 degrees. If you have an oven thermometer, one of the ones that plugs right into the oven, and you can leave it in there while the ham cooks, you will know when your ham is perfect. If you do not have one, I think it's very important to give yourself about 20 minutes a pound, so that for a 6-pound ham, you're talking 2 hours. Now, I start them at 325. I have a very specific method, which you can find out about on my website. But what it basically involves is that before we put any cloves, before we do anything, we do cross cuts on our ham and put it in the oven for a half hour. The ham opens up, and then you put your cloves into the ham. And of course, they go deeper into the ham because the ham has opened up. So you get much more flavor, and that's when you start brushing on the glaze. And I brush on the glaze every half hour thereafter so that there's a buildup of glaze and you get this wonderful, gorgeous, mahogany brown color to your ham. And that is really my... there's one other little thing that I think is very important. If you're going to cook ham low and slow, you really need to put some liquid into your roasting pan. And that liquid, and if you tent the ham before you glaze it, you can't, obviously, once you've glazed it, you can't. But to get that ham going and to get that ham to open up before you put your cloves on, it's wonderful to put pear juice or apple juice, almost anything. It'll actually bring some flavor into the ham and will stop it from drying out. You can use white wine, anything. But don't put a ham directly into an oven, a hot oven, with nothing in the pan, because you can dry your ham out rather severely.
Okay. Fantastic tips. I actually going to take a couple of those with me and use them on my next ham bake. Monty, where else can we find you?
Where else can you find me? Well, I'm hoping you're going to find me on your bookstore shelves in the not too distant future. My book is called Hampton's Weekends. And it's a fascinating project because they are all original recipes. This is not all, these are not recipes that are on my blog at all. They're all things that I've developed and that use our really wonderful produce out on the east end of Long Island. And the book will come, I own Hamptons.com, Hamptonsweekends.com, which will mean that we will have a web presence, and the web presence will differ from the book in that we will have step-by-step shots of every recipe and how to prepare it, so you know what to look for. And then we'll also have an iPhone app that will be grocery lists for every recipe, so that you'll be able to take it to the grocery store, have it in front of you, and order get exactly what you need to make our dishes come alive in your own kitchen.
Well, that's excellent. Well, Monty, it's been a fantastic half hour talking with you. I've learned so much about just hams alone.
Well, Gary, I'm glad to have talked to you, and it's wonderful what you're doing.
Thank you. Well, I would like to end it here. Everybody, you can find Monty at montysham.com. And I'm sure that he will be releasing the cookbook very soon. And it's very exciting that we'll be able to take a look at that. Perhaps, Monty, when your cookbook's released, you can come back on and we can talk about that at that time.
Love to do that. We're looking for publication in time for Christmas, of course.
Excellent. Love to have you back on. Monty, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Gary, and thank all your listeners for listening.
Absolutely. Take care now.